There goes the final song in the from the Broadway original cast album of Hairspray. And thanks to Joe for doing another great big band Broadway and Beyond show. That's every Friday morning from 10 a.m. until 1 o'clock. It is 1 o'clock now. It is WHFR Dearborn that you're listening to from Henry Ford Community College. We're the independent, non-commercial station that's making waves. Now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. And welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today here at Henry Ford Community College. It's a bright and sunny but cold, wintry Michigan day, of course. But at least no more snow for a while. I guess that's always good. In the studio with me is our WHFR News Director, Dennis. And welcome to the show. This is mic check time. Let's see if we can hear you.
Mic check. Dennis check.
Dennis check time.
I am okay. Here.
Yeah,
you know, we're supposed to get a lot more snow Sunday again.
Really?
Just heard Sunday through Tuesday, more snow.
Okay. Well, we'll be ready for it.
I think we are. We're always ready in Michigan.
I've got my shoveling skills now down, and my muscles are healing and so on.
Do you have a shovel, or do you snowblow?
I shovel, just like I rake. I don't believe in those electronic devices.
I knew I liked you.
They're not good exercise. They're noisy. They're polluting of the environment.
They are.
In regard to the, it's the usual story that I tell every year about the city. Now, there was only 6 inches, and the city does promise to plow, I think it's 6 inches, maybe at 4 inches.
I think it's four.
I think they could save a lot of money if they waited until it was 8 or 10 inches, when it really makes a difference. Because at the bottom of my driveway, because the city came and plowed the street, there was 12 inches of not just snow, but snow and ice.
Because
it all melted, and that would have kept any one of our cars from getting out of the driveway. Without a lot of trouble anyway. And trying to shovel that, it is solid. It is heavy. And the other 6 inches was a breeze. And in fact, if they hadn't shoveled, I mean, if they hadn't done the streets, almost most cars could easily get through. It was 6 inches of snow. There was not much drifting, at least not in my neighborhood anyway. And I don't think anybody would have had trouble. But, you know, people want the street shoveled, and, that means that you do have to tackle that mound of ice and snow that the plows actually create at the bottom of your driveway. Now, if there was 8 or 10 inches there, well, your car couldn't even get out of the driveway, and you'd have to shovel anyway. But I don't think they should shovel the streets. Sorry, you know, the opinions expressed in this show are not those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College necessarily, but I don't think they should shovel until it's really a serious problem and you're going to have to shovel the drive anyway. 6 inches on the drive or on the streets is very passable for all the cars, point about the snowblower, they couldn't handle that 12-inch mound because it was all ice.
It was all ice.
It was all ice and packed. Snowblowers, unless they're, you know, monster ones, they can't really chew up ice. They just sort of get the blowing snow and toss it around. Plus, it takes a lot longer because if it's windy, that blowing snow just blows right back in your face.
So, well, my answer to the snow at the end of the driveway is simple. It's called patience because around, I don't know, maybe the middle of March, it will melt anyway.
Yeah, just don't go anywhere until March.
Well, you know me. I don't go out much anyway.
Or hopefully, if you live in the city, you can walk where you need to go. Yeah, right. We're moving on to other stories, and our many important stories here at the Journal today, the new WHFR Journal. Why do we call it new? Because it's not the same as last week.
That's right.
That's right, says Dennis. Okay, at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, just surveying a couple of headline stories there. Ford Motor Company in the headlines, its profits, they say, for 2010 are their best in 10 years. They made a profit of $6.6 billion.
Wow.
Which actually, because of various employee revenue sharing plans that they have in place and contractually in place, the average employee at Ford is going to get about $5,000 in a single check.
Okay.
Which is great. That's something like 40,000 of their employees will get $5,000 check. Of course, not the ones that have already been laid off or let go or whatever, but those remaining, that's really nice that they are paying that back. We have some negative thoughts about Ford and their tax bill a little later on from another edition of the Press and Guide, but nonetheless, good for them. Interestingly, the way Wall Street is, though, buried in that story in the Press and Guide, Wall Street analysts are quoted, whoever they are, as saying that's not as good as they expected Ford to have done.
Yeah. It's never good enough, is it?
The best in 10 years. Yeah. How good do you want it?
We want the best in 12 years.
And I noticed this week, their stock has gone down a little teeny bit.
Yeah,
a little bit. Because Wall Street said they didn't meet expectation. Well, who are these Wall Street analysts? I know it's a couple of companies that specialize in predictions, but give Ford a break here. The best in 10 years?
I wonder if those Wall Street analysts were on the receiving end of any help.
You know, and we know that from other stories and you know, that the research I've done, they've got a lot of great product coming down the pike, as they say, next year, couple years. Great new Ford Focus coming here. Test reports. I read Car Magazine, which is published in England. They love it. They compared it to everything else on the road. The new Ford Focus, which is based on the British design anyway, European design anyway, is going to be coming here. And safe car, well-performing, good handling. And there might even be, in two more years, an RS version, which is going to have their Eco4, but 260 horsepower in a Focus. So
now,
that,
how long will it work on that charge? Is that the same?
No, I was saying their electric car is coming here too later this year.
Right, and
electric version of that.
Is it the same similar situation like with the Leaf, where if you're tooling around your city, you're fine, but if you go for long distances,
very comparable, 80 to 100 miles
not
on
bad.
A charge.
Not bad.
You know, but it and we don't know about availability. I don't see them taking orders yet, but like Nissan took orders like nationally 8 months in advance, and they've sold out everything, so we'll have to wait and see on that. But so Ford, good for you and good for the revenue sharing. But again, how did that revenue sharing get in there? Because of unions negotiating it with their employer. So it's contractually required that if they make a profit, part of it goes into that employee revenue sharing bonus checks, if you will. And so let's be honest here. Ford's not just giving money away for because they feel like it.
Yeah, nice job.
We love our employees, those that are left. And maybe they do. They should if their employees are good employees. Of course they love them and they want to. But that's a contractual thing they had to do, folks, not just out of the goodness of their hearts. They're running a business after all.
Well, at some point they had to agree to it. So let's give them that.
Right, they did agree to it. Yeah. Some of our Michigan representatives are considering a bill to regionalize Detroit Water Department, since it's already been reported this week that water rates to various suburban communities, and our water is provided in Dearborn by the city of Detroit. And they also, I think, do they handle our sewage processing too? I think they do that too.
Yes.
We have to worry about the sewage draining problem, the sewage drains, and that's the big expense that Mayor O'Reilly was talking about, where one of the big expenses for the city is the Combined Sewer Overflow Project, CSO.
CSO. Been talking about that for a while.
It's not the DSO, which is the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra.
Or the CYO.
Well, really, because the other plan, which was to dig these huge, deep carry-ons, as they're called, just look like overflow tanks to me. That just wasn't working. They got a couple built. They're probably going to have to use them.
Right.
But now they're doing a whole separate sewer system throughout the neighborhoods. It's a secondary sewer system just for the sewage. And that's really costly too, but at least it's more reliable. The carry-on thing was state-of-the-art plan, and wasn't really state-of-the-art. It was not proven yet.
But wasn't that something where they actually started the process and said, wait a minute, maybe there's something better or something?
Well, they had thinking back about 15 years, the initial drilling, which was down on Rotunda near where I live, they found sulfur gas. They had shifting sands when they went down so deep to try to build this big, like a 15-foot, 20-foot-high tunnel for the sewage. Something that just hadn't been thought of before. And then so there was a question of, hey, were your engineers at fault or our engineers? Right. There was legal suits. One worker died.
Yeah.
And they didn't directly sue the city for that, I don't think, or they didn't win anyway. But and then, of course, in charge of public works was a guy who's no longer with the city, Kurt Guyberson, whose background was cable television, telecom.
Sure.
But they put him in charge of the DPW at the start of this project. So unfortunately, because he was not an engineer, he had to go by what other engineers were telling him. So I don't directly blame him, but you know, the current DPW has engineering background.
Yeah. He was not an engineer, but he knew what channel it was on.
Well, and you know, Mayor Guido, the city council, was all involved in this, and Mayor O'Reilly was on the council at the time as a councilman. They were all misled or misunderstanding or whatever. They thought it would work, but the cost is still somewhere between $300 and $400 million to the taxpayers.
Right.
But as Mayor O'Reilly said, we don't have to worry about that, because it's already paid by millage. The people of Dearborn voted without really knowing how much it's going to be. They didn't really realize. But anyway, they voted a separate millage as the way to pay for this.
Right.
So that's over and done. So they're still stuck for it. They'll be paying, we'll be paying, Dearborn householder that I am too, for a dozen years or more to pay this off. The costs have been reduced somewhat by Mayor O'Reilly's alternative plan. As he said, you'll not only get brand new sewer systems in the neighborhoods where it has to go, even though there'll be an upset to your streets, they're going to have to redo the whole street too.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a brand new street out of it, as well as a brand new state-of-the-art new sewer system, because the carry-ons would have left all the old sewer lines still rotting away.
Right.
And they would have needed to be replaced anyway in the next 10 or 15 years at a huge cost. So in a way, this is creating, you know, it's replacing old infrastructure.
So long term,
well,
it's a good deal.
Long term, it may be a good deal for the city. The cost may balance out, but it's the largest single cost that the city of Dearborn has ever had to incur, this CSO project. But it's nothing to do with the current budget. We all agreed to pay it via a separate millage. So,
you know, and it was relatively quick and painless. I mean, we couldn't park. Well, I felt so.
Where? You mean the drilling?
Yeah.
It's not done.
But. Well, they already did in front of my house. I'm done.
Well, good for you, but no, there's a lot more to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a big city.
They needed an extension from the environmental agencies involved. Mm-hmm. I think the state of Michigan, the DN, Department of Natural Resources, DNR, and also the government, the federal government, Environmental Protection Agency. So there's still a long way to go with that, and we'll still be paying on it for quite a while. And if you broke down the cost of that per month, it's huge per household. I mean, $100 or more just for this, I think, for the average home in Dearborn. Just for that alone, you know, water cost aside. So anyway, the point of my bringing up the story, because the story's in the paper, and you should read the Times Herald and the Press and Guide every week. You should subscribe, folks. Keep those papers alive for what investigative reporting they do. But George Duraney said, well, I'm considering supporting the bill, which has already been introduced by Kurt Heise, or Hess, H-E-I-S-E, from Plymouth. He's a freshman rep too, just
really?
Like Duraney. So, but Duraney says, yeah, I heard about it, and I think it's good, and maybe, I don't know, I just got here. That was his quote, I just got here. And I'd like to know more. Well, so why put this in the paper, since really it's all freshman reps? It's been introduced apparently to a committee, of course. Maybe it's been assigned to a committee, maybe not even at this point. So it's nowhere near passing. But we do know that Detroit water rates are going to go up, and sewage rates are going to go up in some communities, not Dearborn. Was it Hamtramck, Poor Hamtramck, or Highland Park? 40% increase in water rates.
Wow.
Or water and sewer rates, I heard this week. And some other communities is 20% or so. So a lot of these communities would like to see a bill like this pass, and then they're actually the owners of the whole system. But I don't know how can they take the water system away from Detroit?
You can't.
I mean, how can they just take it away from the city? But I guess the legislature can do that. But in fact, most of the city's customers are in the suburbs. And so if the suburbs want to have, you know, no taxation without representation, if they want to have a say in it, then they've got to be part owners in it. And maybe that would be good. Maybe there would be less cost to the people in Detroit if they don't have to operate it all by themselves. I don't know.
I don't either, but it would lead you to believe that there could be improvements because now things are suddenly affordable. I mean, that's an influx of large influx of money.
I agree with George Duranio. It's going to take a lot of research to find out what's going to go on. The concept is, well, if the majority of the suburbs are the customers, and then we should own it and make our own decisions about whether or not we get the increases. We should all be part of the company, if you will. Right. I understand that, but it's more complicated than that, I'm sure. As a story I gave you, which is from sort of a scandal sheet here, the American Free Press. Have you ever looked at that, Dennis?
I have, because of you. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's online, but they do. You can get a printed version on, I think it's a monthly version at least. There's sort of a conspiracy paper. Mm-hmm. They have stories about, you know, Obama not being born in the U.S.
Oh, we love
still,
stuff like
still
that.
Like that.
Really?
And, you know, the Kennedy assassination was by the CIA and all those things, but they picked up on something that I guess I missed in local papers. Detroit has indicated that they're probably going to be officially bankrupt.
Yeah.
In a year or so? Do you remember that story? It must have been a couple of weeks ago that Mayor Bing might have mentioned something about it.
Well, they didn't say it was inevitable, right?
Uh-huh, right.
They,
I don't know.
I remember that they were saying that if we don't do this and we don't do that. But some of the cuts they were talking about and some of the revenue increases were just ludicrous. So, I mean, it seems like it's inevitable.
Yeah, so the American Free Press story here, which you can go to AmericanFreePress.com.
This is cool.
Whatever, talks about Detroit's demise and what it means. I mean, it's over and done as far as they're concerned, and bodes the worst for other large cities and so on.
Well, the headline you put in front of me is Detroit's demise, a dire warning for other cities.
There you go.
And the odds-on favorite to topple first is Illinois.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, Illinois is not a city, of course. That's the problem of the way they wrote that, but I don't know, Chicago? I mean,
well, it says recent estimates place 48 states in an at-risk status.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't
understand. And 48 states, that would be Michigan, too.
Sure.
At risk, just because we got a deficit. It's not as bad as other states, but we can't figure out how to solve that yet. So
that's really, you're right. That's the answer. It's like, you can have a deficit, but how do you get out of it?
Hope you're enjoying the opinions of Dennis and Jay here on the new WHFR Journal. Remember, we want to raise issues and have you think about them and have you read the original stories yourself, do some research online, talk to your friends and neighbors. Don't take anything we say for face value. Just trying to prod you to do some research on your own. Never believe anything you hear on radio and TV as the ultimate truth that you should immediately act on. That would be a very bad idea. Also, Fortson, a movie about Fortson football team, Fortson High School football team, has been completed by a Muslim director, and apparently a lot of the people on the team are Muslims, and he thought it would make an interesting story. He's not from this area, but when he heard that they were competing, and I think it was some sort of high school football playoff series during Ramadan.
Okay.
So if you can't eat during the day, what does that mean to your ability to play football, you know, along the way or at night or whatever?
Wow.
And the prayer observances and so on. So he did a documentary on that, and it actually was good enough to be accepted, not at the famous Sundance Film Festival, which just completed in Park City, Utah, which is, you know, I mentioned on this show last week that we did have a film that was made in Dearborn that got accepted. It was one of the couple hundred that were accepted out of 8,000 to 10,000 entries.
Huh.
It was the one starring Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yeah.
And other Hollywood stars, or Hollywood recognizable names anyway, at the center.
They put that big church facade up, sure.
Yeah. But that was good enough to actually get. So it was in the time. I thought that was great. And so it might get a distributor and a release sometime. Well, if you can't get in to Sundance, they have four or five other festivals that have a similar name, such as Slam Dance.
Of course.
And it's just you take your little, you know, mini videotape, mini DV, mini tape, and they give you like a basement somewhere or a closet or two, and you have 10, 15 people in, and you can screen it. So the Slam Dance is very low cost, no overhead kind of festival, but if you're part of the the 8,000 or so that didn't get in, it didn't get accepted, right. Then you might get accepted into one of these other little festivals there. And so it was shown there. So he's hoping he'll get a distributor or fund somebody who wants to release it on DVD at least.
That seems very specialized.
He did promise that it would come. No matter, even didn't get a distributor, he'll bring the finished film back to Dearborn, have a screening somewhere so people at Dearborn can see it.
Wonderful.
Apparently, even the football team at Fortson hasn't seen it yet. So
yeah, they're only in it.
Yeah, they're only the stars.
Doesn't that seem really specialized, kind of a niche? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I understand that it's not about football. There's a bigger picture here.
Yeah, we wanted to show how the Muslim religion fits into American culture, how it's adapting.
Okay.
Know? And not to be afraid of it, of course, not to be fearful right. of Muslim football players.
Yeah, actually, they're a pretty good team. So
are they? I don't know anything about the score, but apparently they were in the playoffs at least, so they must have been better than average to get into
absolutely.
The playoffs, I guess. All right. Times-Herald paper from this last week just went in detail about the story where I was the on-site reporter last week at O'Reilly's Mayor O'Reilly's speech, where he outlined a plan to save the city $20 million within the next 2 years, primarily through having to get us, the voters, to approve a millage increase. Only answer, really. And he made a very compelling case. I did get confirmation today. We'll have Mayor O'Reilly here. I know it's a ways away on April 15th for a full hour of the journal during our pledge drive week, as he usually is here, and that's been confirmed today. He will be making his, as I said last week, his State of the City address on February 23rd, which is a Wednesday evening.
Right.
They're going to be carrying that live on CDTV. That is, there's a channel on the, I think, even the WOW cable system, as well as the Comcast system, that will have that live. I don't know what time it starts. I haven't seen that yet. Probably 7 p.m., just guessing, on Wednesday evening, February 23rd. WHFR, we will be recording that with our own equipment, and broadcasting it, just chopping it down to the speech itself on this show, on the journal, 2 days later, on the 25th.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so we'll be covering. The reason we're not doing it live this year, we did it live last year, and the city was fine about allowing us to do a live broadcast, FM broadcast, too, is because we've already committed to the Homelessness Marathon for our second year, and that's a national downlinked satellite program, and it raises awareness of about what homelessness is. This year, it's originating from Kansas City, Missouri, not Detroit, but it's still the same problem in all major areas of the country and still needs some good answers applied. Okay, 22 minutes after. Okay, moving on to the Dearborn Press and Guide from February the 2nd, this last Wednesday. On the front page, top story, that is further right at the top of the page, a fact finder, it says, suggests that Dearborn teachers give concessions.
Hmm.
The Dearborn teachers of K through 12, Dearborn Public Schools, have not had a contract since 2009, and they thought they had reached an agreement with the school board about 6 months ago, and then the board turned around and said, you know, we're going to back off on this and ask for a fact finder. I guess they thought the fact finder would give them a better deal. Now, the fact finder did say that, among other things, the teachers have to, they think the teachers should take a 2.4% pay cut. Ouch. And
how big?
2.4%.
Okay.
And pay for more expensive options. Individually, the teacher should pay for, I think it's individually, I don't know, maybe it's contract-wide, that it seems like if you want a more expensive health care plan, that you could pay for it, but you'd have to choose to pay the extra money for the extra care. I don't know, like a lower deductible to, you know, prescription drug cost or something. I'm not sure how. But in other words, they're going to get hit for some money. And, you know, Dearborn doesn't have the highest paid teachers in the state to start with. And so we're giving them a pay cut. But I guess they're happy they have a job at all, right? That's how my daughter feels out in Southfield with all the people who've laid off out there. Don't get me started on her situation.
It just keeps getting worse, too, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, her classroom, she's the only science teacher in Burney Middle School out there that's left. They've laid off all the others. She has 12-year seniority or 13-year seniority, I think, at this point. And they can't really lay her off because they won't have any science teacher.
Right.
But I'm sure there's some way they can figure that one out if they had to. No, she's in court today because of special ed complaints, not about her, but about students. And the special ed teacher at the school is expected to take a lunch break. And so they need some rest. So what do you do with the special ed students? Well, the city used to have a part-time person who had certificate in special ed taking care of the students in that hour.
Right.
Okay. Well, they laid off that person, and they dumped all the special ed students on my daughter during that hour. And she has no certificate in special ed. So it's a matter of keeping them. And these are fairly violent, out-of-control
right.
students.
I mean,
this is very, very serious
problems,
behavior problems, psychological problems, and so on. Not putting them down necessarily, but, you know, it's a challenge. And of course, there's a lot of legal issues that tie up the schools with special ed between, complaints about the students or requests for help with the students. But basically Southfield is understaffed in terms of special ed as well as some other areas. And most schools, if they keep laying off teachers, they'll be understaffed. They have, my daughter has 40 plus students per hour, which is almost unmanageable.
That's
the
incredible.
City of Dearborn is not doing as badly in terms of that average, I know. And she has all these special ed students that she, doesn't know what to do with. And in fact, she can't even the office has said, don't send them down to the office anymore. What do I do with them? You know, they're disruptive and out of control. Well, you can't touch them. You can't put them in the hall because then they'd be unsupervised. And you can't send them down here because we have too many already at the office. So it's a disaster out there, and I hope it's only the Burney Middle School.
I mean, the way you just described it reminded me, I went back to this the American Free Press that you put over here, and you were talking about the city of Detroit.
Yeah.
One of the ways that they can turn $100 million in debt and try to stave off bankruptcy is by possibly closing half of the schools in Detroit and increasing class sizes to 60 or more.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Do you think that'll be a good idea? Oh my gosh!
Well, there won't be any education happening.
Can you? I mean,
just won't happen.
And we have no idea what percentage of those 60 kids in each classroom are special needs. You know what I mean? You don't, because it doesn't seem like they separate as much anymore.
Incredible. No, since for lack of budget money, they might be able to hire a special ed teacher, but basically the kids are mainstreamed, as they call it,
right,
in the other classes. So there's that constant 2, 3, 4, 6 disturbing people. I mean, we're
right.
talking about yelling, screaming,
violent acts
to students, to teachers, to the equipment in the room,
right,
constantly.
Yeah.
And so it's just wrong. It's the wrong way to do it. My daughter and other teachers have no power in making suggestions. Apparently there's no money for even the administration to act on anything. It's just a very difficult situation for all our teachers, and I don't think we should, number one, shouldn't be laying any teachers off. Number two, no matter how much it costs us in additional taxes, and number two, they need adequate resources and therefore fewer students in order to get any education happening. Otherwise, education will not happen, and that will be to the disservice of all of our children.
That's what I mean. It's like I look at Dearborn and I think, boy, this sounds really weird, but boy, are we lucky. You know what I mean? Everything's relative, isn't it?
We're relatively lucky.
Yeah.
We do have a call in. As you've informed me, you're trying to schedule a visit from Jim Schoolmaster,
yes,
who is the new president of the Dearborn Board of Ed, as well as the Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees. Same group, different hats,
yeah,
so to speak. And so we'll ask him the hard questions. He's been on the board for many years, and so he's well aware of what's going on there. And I know he'll try to put a positive spin on it all, but what's interesting is with those concessions, you'd think the teachers would be fighting it. There's cuts. They approved cuts, and we don't want that. The teachers union said, okay, we'll go with it.
Right.
And the school board, in that article, has indicated that they're going to go with it. So is this, I think they feel this is as good as they can get. They were the ones that asked for the fact finder, but it sounds to me from what the teachers are saying, the school board 6 months ago wanted even more.
Right.
Wanted even more concessions. And I think the teachers then were going to go for it.
What, at that point?
Yeah, because they said, we're ready to settle.
Yeah, but
and then the school board backed off and said, we want a fact finder. I think thinking like they could get an even better deal from a fact finder.
Exactly the way it played out, and it looks like it kind of backfired.
Well, right. And so that's why the teachers aren't real upset with these concessions.
No.
Because they're probably not as bad as what they had already sort of said they would accept.
Sure.
Earlier, before the fact finder was called in.
But isn't it the same principle? It's $4 a gallon for gas, $4. So when they come down to $3, which is still absurd, we're all grateful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's still expensive.
It's still expensive, but it's the lesser of the two evils. So yeah, no, I agree. But I remember talking about this when it was going on, and we couldn't believe that they had done such an about-face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the teachers are happy.
We have some big stories coming up in the second half hour of the new WHFR Journal, so stay tuned. A couple, of course, great commentaries again from Jim Hightower, our friendly, nationally known progressive. And here is the first one that we're going to present to you, and we'll be back after these two commentaries. Listen close. He's very entertaining, but he also knows what he's talking about nationally. And we'll be back with our big story about Ford and cities settling tax issues, also about a bill proposed by George Doraney to make our Henry Ford Community students more competitive in the job market. Very exciting topic. And Dennis is going to tell us about Campus Connection coming up next Tuesday on the WHFR forum, too. So here's Jim Hightower.
I recently came across three stories that ran in the New York Times on the same day, each in different sections of the paper, yet all tied together across class, politics, and time. In an editorial, the paper noted that after Wall Street crashed our economy, the Great Recession of 2008 caused another 1.7 million Americans to plummet into poverty. In 2009, though, even as joblessness soared, the poverty numbers did not rise. Why? Because President Obama's economic stimulus programs, including expanded unemployment benefits and an increase in food stamps, created a cushion that kept more people from dropping into poverty. Meanwhile, on the front page, the Times reported that a handful of Americans are not suffering at all from the recession, even though they helped cause it. They are the partners in Goldman Sachs, who are now reaping multi-million-dollar bonuses for their work last year, even though they performed poorly. Goldman's profits tumbled in 2010, and it had to pay a half-billion-dollar penalty for practicing investor fraud. Goldman also lobbied Congress to pass a very special law in December that dramatically reduces the taxes on those bonuses. By the way, this same law cuts weekly payments to the unemployed, a wicked move that'll push 175,000 more people into poverty this year. Then, on the obituary page, the Times covered the death of Sergeant Shriver. A lifetime idealist who worked tirelessly against poverty, Shriver helped create and run such pioneering efforts as the Peace Corps, Head Start, Job Corps, VISTA, and Legal Services back in the 1960s. This is Jim Hightower saying, how far we've come, huh? These three news stories jerk us from the time America's political leaders had the stuff to battle poverty to today, when our leaders battle the poor, even as they coddle the super rich.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exciting news, folks! Obama and team say they're recalibrating, retooling, and rebranding his presidency. And they've come up with a dandy new slogan to promote it. Ready? Win the future! Takes your breath away, doesn't it? For those who remember Gerald Ford's hapless presidency, Obama's new slogan might have a familiar ring to it. In 1974, with rampant inflation gobbling up the paychecks of workaday families, Ford blamed the American people, asserting that they were simply spending too much. So, he ordered thousands of red and white buttons that said, WIN. It was an acronym for Whip Inflation Now, which Ford thought would happen if only the public wore the buttons to remind each other to buy less. WIN was, in a word, stupid, and it helped make Jerry a one-term president. Obama, however, hopes his WIN idea catches on. It refers to what he sees as a sort of global Super Bowl in which the USA is competing to, quote, out-innovate, out-educate, and out-build the rest of the world. This is our generation's Sputnik moment, he says, adding that my number one focus is going to be making sure we are competitive. Hooray! Let's go! Washington should harness the idealism, creativity, energy, and can-do spirit of grassroots people into a bold national program to revitalize America's economy, educational system, infrastructure, and the middle class. But wait! Obama's not proposing a true Sputnik response like Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson produced. Instead, he's trusting corporate America to win the future for us, offering deregulation and more tax breaks to entice them. This is Jim Hightower saying, hello, America's corporations are abandoning our workers, communities, egalitarian values, and America itself. Trusting them to serve any interest but their own is a fool's errand.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Jim Hightower there, and of course he has comments that are progressive, but I like the fact that every now and then he sounds like a Tea Partier too, and he supports a lot of things that Ron Paul and Rand Paul, even his son, who is the new senator from Kentucky, freshman senator, as they say, from Kentucky, are proposing. He's got plans to try to get a bill passed to audit the Federal Reserve. Why not? Most companies have to have an outside auditor each year to see if they're doing a good job and handling the money right. And our greatest bank of the U.S. is—I don't see what they're afraid of. Although I know Ben Bernanke and the other people at the Federal Reserve say, "No way, it's totally wrong." Well, like they say with other things that move into your security in the United States, if you got nothing to be worried about, then you get nothing to fear. So I'm all in favor. And just to mention, too, about Representative Ron Paul from Texas, his last book came out a year or so ago called End the Fed. And he's a brilliant economic analyst, and highly recommend you read that. Even if you don't think you're a Republican or a Libertarian, which he more is than a Republican, because most of his ideas about putting regulations on Wall Street and on our federal banking system, or maybe even eliminating parts of it, seem to be right on target with Jim Hightower. Right. A progressive from the so-called left side of the dial. So,
well, no, you know, and you said his writing is really accessible, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah.
Easy to
Very
read.
Very clear, full of information. He writes it himself. He doesn't have a ghostwriter, you know, and for years he's been investigating the economic consequences of the actions in the U.S. and has not been in favor mostly of what the Democrats and the Republicans have done with our economy.
You know, speaking of this, you know, while you were talking last week, of course I couldn't be here, and I don't know if you shared where I was. I was at the Michigan Press Association conference downtown, mm-hmm. and our keynote speaker at our lunch guest was Governor Rick Schneider.
I was going to ask you to make some comments. Did he say anything interesting? Well, it's great that he showed up there. He's really been moving around the state, you know, and in fact, we here at WHFR, we're on his mailing list, maybe because we interviewed him
probably.
That one time too. Yeah. But finally, we're getting these updates. We're getting invitation to press conferences, every speech he gives every day. We're getting summaries. At least it's coming to me anyway.
Right.
I'm not sure if you're seeing it as news director, but he's really... Got a great team to keep the message out there and to be visible himself.
Well, and you know what?
Much more than Granholm ever did, even though I like Jennifer Granholm herself as a person and what she espoused, not that it
right.
She
had intentions.
Didn't come to be.
Well, everything that you just said was what he talked about. In other words,
okay.
The theme was transparency.
Oh, great.
And he so much wants that. And a lot of people said, well, what are you going to do about this? What are you about this? And he was very quick to point out that not only he told people what he was going to do, and I won't get into specifics, that would take a while, but mm-hmm. not only did he talk about what he was going to do, but he talked about how he had monitors in place so that people could, for lack of a better term, judge the process. In other words, be able to monitor it. And that was a really big deal to him. Now, he also, there were 27 legislators there, and they introduced every single one of them, had them stand up and take a bow, and told where they were from. So that it was a very, fortunately, it was a very good lunch. The chicken Caesar salad was wonderful. But Schneider, no notes, nothing. Just got up there, started talking. And you know how he impresses me as
and
a speaker.
And this was a journalism student conference?
Not just students. It was the Michigan Press Association.
Oh,
so professionals as well.
Oh, wow.
That
was a big deal. Yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that here he is, and he's in front of the media. I mean, literally, we're the media eating lunch as he's speaking, and he's off the cuff speaking very eloquently. Fox was there with their cameras. A lot of other media was there. I don't know what was on television, whatever, but like you said, I was just glad he showed up. Mm-hmm. But apparently he was there the year before as a guest, but of course that was during the campaign.
Well, in the papers this week, editorial from the Press and Guide, I think it was, I didn't write it down, I think it's Wednesday's editorial, was very much in favor of his stand against most Republicans, to build the second bridge across the river.
Very.
And so it's amazing how everybody is falling in line there. And it was completely logical. I mean, even Jack Lessenberry, who's kind of a wild progressive kind of guy in his Metro Times editorials anyway.
Right.
And quite insulting to various people when he
I heard
when
he's
he wanted
just
to
like
be.
That, too.
I've interviewed him here on the show by phone a couple times, and he was respectful. On his, he had a regular show or regular commentaries on Michigan Public Radio from in Ann Arbor, and I listened to those. Very respectful, very controlled. They don't let him go wild on that. But Metro Times, he gets a little. But he's been saying, get the second bridge for 2-3 years now. And this other guy who owns the Ambassador, as I said last week on the show, it's just completely wrong for a private citizen, just the thought of it, you know, to own a major connection between U.S. and Canada. And there's not another one for, what, until Port Huron or
right.
whatever.
Sorry.
It's just, it's not, the, I mean, legally we could send troops in to keep the bridge open. He couldn't shut it down, really, if our government wanted to keep it open. I don't think he could claim it's private property. I don't know how far that would go. But he's probably got some agreement with the state not to ever shut it down without state's permission. But for him to stop a second bridge from being built, if it's economically feasible, and if Canada is going to pay a chunk of change here too, it just there's no rational sense behind that other than he's protecting his own profit
right.
margin.
Absolutely,
the billionaire that he is, or multimillionaire that he is.
And don't you ever wonder why he didn't put up the second bridge? If it's something that's inevitable.
Oh yeah, he volunteered to put a few more lanes on his own Ambassador.
Yeah, I heard
bridge,
that. Yeah,
yeah
that
wouldn't be.
I'll take the tunnel, thank you.
Yeah, there you go. I'd rather die in the tunnel than fall off the bridge.
That's right.
Okay. That's for the paranoid out there. Okay. Well, you know, every time I go through the tunnel, I see like what appears to be leaks in the wall.
Everywhere.
You know, but
I remember when I was a kid.
It's not really a leak. It's probably just condensation or something.
But or just, maybe that's to relieve the pressure. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, just get me over there or back.
Yeah, I'll try a kayak next time. Okay. That's in regard to Fortson Island, you know, which Dave Norwood, the sustainability coordinator at the last meeting, said that one of the things they hope to do when they get the island back to nature, thanks to a couple of great grants that have been approved, and this is in the Press and Guide February 2nd. In fact, there's two stories that repeat Dave Norwood's accomplishments so far, one on 10A talking more about the roundtable, and one on 12A, which is like the summary statement of everything he's accomplished, which is what he said at the roundtable.
Which is what he said. And, of course, he
so
said
if
that
you missed
here.
It on 10A and you get to 12A and you think it's deja vu, I knew this. How did I know that? Well, just 2 pages
they're
back.
They're just reinforcing
folks.
It. Sure.
Boy, was it reinforced. But, you know, Fortson Island might have a chance for people to use a kayak in good weather to get to the island and back. So, you know, not a gasoline engine boat that's going to pollute anything.
Right.
But so it might be an interesting new recreational activity, a kayak to Fortson Island someday.
Why not?
Someday, a couple of years. Sure. I think it'd be great fun. I mean,
have you ever been kayaking?
In Austin, Texas. Every morning they have a little lake that it's artificial lake that because of dams and that. They have several, 6 or 7 lakes around Austin, Texas because of their dam network. It's all from the Colorado River.
Right.
It fills it from 1,000 miles away. But every morning, people are out right there in downtown Austin kayaking just for their exercise for the day.
I love it.
It doesn't do much for their legs, but, you know, unless the kayak turns over and they have to swim for it.
Yeah.
but it's great exercise, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, it does take some balance, you know.
Oh, that's so what I was saying.
You don't tip over.
It's tricky. Yeah, but once you learn it, it's a blast.
And because it's a small little boat, it doesn't cost as much as even a rowboat, I wouldn't think, to buy.
So. While we're on this, can I? Yeah. We have the next, of course, Jay talked about the fourth. Yeah, you and I shared time at the fourth sustainability roundtable. This is roundtable four, part two, chemical contaminants in food and water. And that'll be Tuesday. It's February 15th. I believe that's a Tuesday.
Tuesday it is.
6 to 8 p.m., just like the other ones. It will be here at the Henry Ford Community College SME building. That, of course, is the first driveway south of Ford Road, west side of Evergreen, and the north door is around the corner. They have signs up there for it.
SME is formerly known as Society of Manufacturing Engineers Building, and they still do lease them a portion of the building, but we have the building for our use now and community use too, which is great. So, this time it's contaminants in your food and water.
And Lourdes Lohr, who is obviously a professor of nutrition here at the college, she'll it'll be the second part of her discussion. She's the main speaker, and she's continuing her subject of food issues, the environmental crisis on your plate. And if that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does.
brings it home, doesn't it?
Yeah, but please, folks, this is open to everyone.
No charge.
Mm-hmm. I've been to every single one. Jay was fortunate to be able to attend the last one.
I should be able to get to the next one.
We learn a lot. And just so you know, my email also said, listen, everybody brings a dish to pass, because we do that. It's a communal thing, and it's wonderful.
Hopefully it's something sustainable. That means it's vegetarian, probably not meat-based.
Yeah. I'm not bringing my bottled water again. That didn't go over well.
Hot dogs and hamburgers is not sustainable, folks. I hate to tell you this, but that was the first meeting that indicated the problems with a meat-based diet.
There you go.
Anyway, so we're looking forward to that. The fourth or fifth sustainability roundtable coming up on Tuesday evening, February the 15th, a week from next Tuesday, 6 to 8 p.m., HFCC campus, the SME building community room.
Okay.
All right. We're moving on to our big story of the day. Aren't you glad you stayed tuned in here? In the Dearborn Press and Guide, February 2nd, on the front page, although at the bottom, a little off to the side, it says, Ford and cities settle tax issues. Well, the way it's written, it sounds like that the city of Dearborn is making a profit on this of $1.6 million.
It's not really the case, though, is it?
No. Okay. If you read closely, and I had to go back and dig up the story from the Dearborn Times Herald from September 8th, 2010, when it was first announced that the Michigan Tax Commission in 2009, December 2009, ruled to and this was a statement from the Times Herald, to decrease tax rates for Ford and GM and Chrysler facilities all throughout Michigan by as much as 75%. And this is in every category. In other words, not just the land, but the equipment on it, and there may be some other categories. Now, so what this story in the Press and Guide is doing, and I try to get confirmation and more details, but I think they missed the point here. I'm sorry, Tim Powers and Press and Guide. We'll see what the Times Herald does as a follow-up, because they wrote the original story on this. You see, the original story in the Times Herald had direct quotes from city assessor Gary Evanko that Dearborn's that these rates had decreased in every category, some by as much as 75%, and that Dearborn's total loss from the Ford Motor Company property, I don't think we have any GM or Chrysler property here, but the Ford Motor Company property tax loss will be $4 million. Now, that would be starting to be billed, or it would start to be lost, I think, in July of this year.
All right.
For the 2011 fiscal year or whatever. That's a big loss of $4 million. So you go back to the story in the Press and Guide from February 2nd this week, and you think, you mean they made up $1.6 million of the $4 million loss? Do you mean that they're still going to be losing $2.4 million over last year?
Right.
In taxes? Yes, I think so. Now, I can't get confirmation on this just because the story just broke, and I've been reading it and trying to figure it out.
This whole thing's been, even back in September, was almost an enigma.
The story in the Press and Guide talks about the valuation. This was the agreement with Ford Motor that was just announced, that the valuation of the equipment in the plant that category of stuff.
Okay.
They agreed to a 30% increase in taxable value for that. But I think that's after the 50% tax cut that they got from the tax commission in the first place. And it's only one of several categories of taxations. So the city of Dearborn is still losing money on whatever those other categories are, as much as 75% maybe.
So it sounds like they are being allowed to depreciate the equipment up to a certain point that would be no?
It's not about depreciation. It's just about paying money on the value of your property that you currently have there.
Okay.
And whether or not
it's worth
the,
less?
The tax rate, the computation of how much it's worth is kind of like depreciation, but no, it's right. Just the current value of that property should be assessed at, well, according to the story, 30% more, but it's 30% more than the 50% discount that the tax commission already gave them.
Gotcha.
As the story indicates, and written by J. Patrick Pepper pretty responsibly, because he had quotes from the mayor and I don't think Ford, but anyway, at least from Mayor O'Reilly here, is that the Michigan Tax Commission, and we tried to do some research on them. They wouldn't return our phone calls up in Lansing.
We got nothing.
We got nothing from them about trying to find out the details of why they did this. Ford Motor Company made a presentation on behalf of all the Michigan automakers, well, the main ones, Ford, GM, and Chrysler, and they had, according to Mayor O'Reilly in the city, some really flawed data about why they should get this monster tax cut.
Right.
And that's stated in the Press and Guide article, as well as back in the Times Herald article, is that the tax commission was buffaloed, if you will, into doing this by faulty information, exaggerated information from Ford Motor Company lawyers. Although I'm sure they can make a great presentation, you know, but they didn't ask for any other opinions.
Right.
They didn't ask for opinions from the cities or any city assessors. And this affected every city in Michigan, including like Wayne and Flat Rock and others and Allen Park and Wyandotte that have property held by the big three, as we used to call them. And so as I see it, the city is still losing 35% on that particular category and is still losing on the other categories where there was no agreement that they would apparently be able to increase from what the tax commission said that was going to be decreased. So I hope you can follow that. On radio, I know these things are complicated, but let me just state what I know very clearly. In the Times Herald article from September 8th, Gary Ivanko, city assessor in Dearborn, said that the Michigan Tax Commission rulings decrease rates in every category for the big three, some by as much as 75%. Dearborn's loss, therefore, would be for next year $4 million.
Okay.
So in the best possible scenarios here, according to the Press and Guide article, if the city of Dearborn got a 30% increase in that one category, and therefore an additional $1.6 million, they're still going to be down $2.4 million.
Right.
So thank you, Ford Motor Company, for nothing. But why didn't they take my advice that I'm sure they heard of, because they must listen to the show,
right,
back in September when I said, get a class action suit, all the cities involved, and sue the Michigan Tax Commission, or sue the big three, or whatever you have to do. Well, as it said in the Press and Guide article this week, the big lawyers of the big three could tie this up for years and years and years before there's an outcome, which you might wind up losing anyway.
Plus, they're most likely the catalyst of this in the first place.
Yeah, and the cost of all that extra legal time for all the cities could be millions of dollars themselves, and they don't have any money to do that.
That's
so
the point.
They're going to agree, like the school teachers, to this minor payback, but still a major cut in the valuation of property and therefore the taxes coming from Ford Motor Company to Dearborn and so on. Now, Wayne and Flat Rock were stated in the Press and Guide article as saying, thank goodness we won't have to like privatize our police. I mean, that's what Wayne was considering. We'll survive now.
Right.
So thank you, Dearborn, because apparently, I don't know if any other cities were involved in the negotiations. At least Dearborn was. And I think it would apply to...
Yeah.
GM and Chrysler, but we're not sure about that. This was just negotiating with Ford.
Now, all I can say is that we're in Dearborn, and as bad as it is here, you've already made the cases for how bad it could get in Wayne, where they did. They had to look at private police. They had to look at private fire department and things like that. And you know what? Those things might still be considered if they're not getting the all of their tax money.
Well, with property values still going down, I'm sure they're in a similar situation like Dearborn, that in a couple of years it's going to be even worse. So how are they going to make up the difference? So we'll have to listen to Mayor Guido's State of the City address. It's probably going to be much similar. Mayor O'Reilly. Guido, sorry. In the spirit of Mayor Guido. In the spirit of all the former mayors, do we save the city? And so that'll be a very interesting presentation, but a lot of it, I'm sure, will be verbatim from his address last week Thursday about the tax situation and the deficit situation coming up in 2 years. We still have enough money in our general fund, $28 million, thank you, our savings account for the city. It'll last us 2 years, and then it'll be gone and you know, we've got to do something else.
What was the turnout at that? I forgot to ask you on Thursday. Were there quite a few people there?
I counted 15.
You didn't even expect that many, though, did you? Or was that about?
No, Mayor O'Reilly expected more of the Save Our Pools people.
Well, don't.
It's just such a small issue.
I know.
Small amount of money. But, yeah, do I think a lot of service will have to be cut? Yeah, I think the pools will have to be cut because even user fees can't pay for the renovation of all the pools.
That's the tip of the iceberg, though.
I don't think there's anything you can do about that, guys. You want to save your pools. You can say, you know, the mayor said, well, we have to understand user fees. Nobody can pay enough money. I mean, you might as well build your own pool in your backyard rather than trying to pay your portion as a user only for the pools of Dearborn. And we get 6, 7, 8 of them.
Yeah.
They just can't stay open. But that's a small part of this deficit. It's such a small part. But yeah, it'll probably have to be cut too.
Yeah.
But it's nothing compared to pension fund increases and health care costs that the city has to pay. That's what's driving the whole thing down. So look for millage proposals, as we said, that the city will have to incorporate within the next 2 years.
Well, and then
the voters will have to vote on it. And if you don't vote for it, the city will be bankrupt.
I guess that was what my next thing is, that they're really, I mean, it's not like they have a lot of options. You're right.
The mayor didn't say it that directly.
No.
Because he's hoping for the best always. But it's when it comes time to voting on this millage increase, folks, which will really just bring back the same amount of dollars you paid in household taxes 2-3 years ago anyway.
Right.
You may not realize you've been paying less because your property has gone down, but the dollar value may have to go back up to what it was. So if you used to be able to pay that much money, the millage increase is probably going to bring it up to that same amount, and that will keep us afloat here in Dearborn and keep city services intact and so on.
But the money's in the bank, too. We do have some savings, fortunately.
But only for 2 years.
Man.
Yeah, because it's being spent for the next two budgets. And the mayor's budget's going to be for 3 years. His next budget is going to be the first time ever a three-year budget has to be approved. That'll take us through this crisis. So he wants the city council to plan and approve how we proceed for the next 3 years financially. And it's going to be phased in cuts and phased in millage requests.
Certainly. Now, and when you have a three-year budget, is there any room for flexibility? I mean, do you have...
There's some minor tweaking you can do
because things
way.
Happen, right? Okay, yeah. I don't mean to sound naive, but I always wondered that when you do something that far in advance, there has
to
be.
even in a budget you're currently in. If it's a 1 year budget, you can make some changes of categories and change funding to a certain extent. So a 3 year budget will give everybody the heads up that that's 2013 is the crisis year, and we've got to get through that. And so we've got to plan the cuts and the reductions and the additional increases in millage to have our to come out equal at the end of 3 years. So you might as well do it now. You can't just do a temporary budget like the state of Michigan has been doing, knowing you're going to be deeper and deeper and deeper each year, but passing it along to the next group of freshman reps.
Well, and of course, Snyder's talking about the two-year budget now. You know, he has been.
Same sort of plan, and he's only looking at 2 years, but still, that's good.
Yeah, that's progress.
When you're in a crisis like this, you've got a plan now and figure it out so there'll be some stability over the next couple of years, even though it means cuts and revenue increases. Yeah.
They treated him like a rock star. They swooped him in and swooped him right out.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, he's been very open with the press.
I know, but it was comical because we had him on here, and of course, Virgil Bonero was here, and it was a lot different. Right. Had he been governor, it would have been a lot different. Yeah. Now, I want to ask you, Governor Snyder did say he only made one commitment to do something, and that had to do with he wanted to start the race at the Sioux or something. Did he not commit to coming back on the Journal after if he was elected governor? I swear he did.
Did he commit or not commit?
He did commit. I think he said, I'll come back when I'm governor.
We'll bring out the archive.
Okay.
Because it's still there. By the way, the podcast of the show, if you really have to listen again, or what I said last week or whatever, they're at whfr.fm. That's our website, whfr.fm. That's it right there, not .com, .net, .fm. And click on the journal button and then pick the right date. Pick the date there that that you want to listen to, which Friday you want to listen to. Dennis, we'll give a little plug here for Campus Connection, which is your forum show, your talk show,
Lindsay and mine.
Next Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. It's all about, of course, Henry Ford Community College and the events here that and services that are open and available to all the community all the time, pretty much, sometimes for a small fee. What are the topics you're going to hit for next Tuesday?
Well, of course, you and I, you know that we talk a little bit about the things that we cover on the journal. We kind of reinforce them, but we're also having planning a nice conversation with Chad Austin, who's the job placement officer here at the school. And there's a lot of really cool things coming up. He has literally at least a seminar or a workshop every week from here until almost the end of the semester. So this is something, and as you know, they're not only for students. Some of these are open to the public. To give you an idea of maybe changing a career, the best way to approach it, including cover letters and resumes, these are things that are available. And Lindsay and I will talk to Chad for at least a portion of our show.
One of the big things that you might want to help support the college and our scholarship funds, I think it goes to the HFCC Collage Concert. I know, crazy names. Is that a misprint? Is it just college concert?
No, it's collage.
Collage, because there's all kinds of musical-related entertainment, vocal, band, dancing, I think, might be included, too, and they're presented at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on February the 26th. And tickets are now on sale. Stories in the paper, Press and Guide this week, and Times Herald, I think. So that's coming up February 26th, HFCC Collage Concert. I've attended those in the past at the center, and it's a fantastic, classy event.
Oh, yeah.
And it does benefit Henry Ford Community College.
When you say classy,
fundraising.
Would you'd wear a suit?
I'll dress
tie,
up a little
sure.
bit.
Okay.
Well, I don't know about the tie. These days, I'm retired, so
yeah.
But I might wear a suit coat. Sure.
You can get away with whatever.
Yeah. I sit in the back row, and nobody will see me. You know, but front row, I'd probably wear a tie. Okay. And also, of course, the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra is doing a sort of a pop concert tonight at 8 p.m. in the center,
right.
And that's going to be a big show, and our WHFR staff will be there with a welcome table in the lobby.
Get a pen.
Get a free HFR pen,
yeah.
As well as maybe our latest